Hello and welcome. Can everyone hear me fine? Okay, good. And the audio, it's good? Yes. Okay, good. Well, thank you all for having me. I'm just logging on, and I had a little bit of technical difficulty getting on this evening, but looks like everything's working. So if it's not working, speak up or send me a message. And so I thought we'd start like we always start, through dropping into our bodies, letting go of the day. And especially this evening, because of the holiday season, because of it being winter time, getting near the winter solstice here, I invite us all to drop deeply inward, to connect to the energy of the heart. To fall deeply out of the mind and to step into Christ consciousness. This is the energy of absolute brilliance, absolute radiance and luminosity. So I invite you a letting go. Letting go of everything and bring the full attention into the heart. And as we do this, you may begin to notice this subtle brilliance waking up. A subtle radiance and luminosity. Deep within the heart. And as you begin to step into this, you may begin to notice that this Christ consciousness, it begins to wake up throughout your being. So the deeper you go into your heart, the deeper you let go and surrender to what you truly are, the more you discover this awakening is not taking place just in the heart, but it's taking place in the space of the mind, the space of the deep hara. This radiance is awake and alive. In the shoulders, the back, the mid-back, lower back, the spine, the pelvis, the legs, the feet, the arms, the hands. And as this Christ consciousness begins to wake up in you, you begin to notice it everywhere, inside and out. This inner brilliance, as we pay attention to it, we notice becomes an outer brilliance as well. That this divinity is everywhere, throughout our being and throughout this world. And so I invite you to join me in the letting go of the everyday human consciousness and stepping into that which is brilliant, that which is beautiful, that which is radiant, within your very nature. As this begins to wake up, you begin to discover that this is the very nature of life. Very nature of life. You begin to notice that the space of your mind is silent, vast, open spaciousness. It's not a dead, void-like spaciousness, but a brilliantly awake, alive, luminous spaciousness. And as the more you open to it, the more you let go into it, you discover the transformative quality of this brilliance. And so some of you will begin to feel this as a heat, like a burning heat, a purification, burning up that which is unnecessary. Burning up that which is lesser. And awakening that which is greater. And so from this space of the rediscovery of your own divinity, the reawakening of our divinity, as we're shaking off the heaviness of the collective consciousness, and stepping into a divine consciousness, I invite you to simultaneously open your crown chakra and call upon God. Call upon this Christ consciousness to begin to give birth in you as you, to begin to awaken greater and greater aspects of your own divinity. And so I invite you to open, to be receptive, and to acknowledge this very powerful stream of grace pouring down into you and awakening your very nature, lighting it up, join me this evening in being like Christ, being a conduit of grace, a conduit of divinity. All it takes, all that's required, is a willingness to be open and receptive, a willingness to receive. Of course, as we're receiving this evening, as we're letting go into this beauty and divinity, I encourage you to scan your consciousness and simply notice anything here which you're struggling with. Is there anything here which is heavy and outdated? Is there anyone you need to forgive or to ask forgiveness from? Is there anything which needs to be released back to God, back to life? Is there anything that we've been holding on to too tightly, too tensely? And if this is the case, now is a wonderful opportunity to release these things, to let go of them. Sometimes our ego holds on to things tightly because it thinks we need these, we need to hold on to them. Our egoic nature likes to repeat the past and hold on to the past in an effort to guard and protect ourselves. But I invite you, if that is happening, to just let it go. Let it go. And so the letting go, the energy of letting go, it's the energy of softness. It's the energy of loosening the grip. I'm just admitting from a place of humility, I can't hold on to this any longer. It's too much. I can't carry this any longer. It's too much. It's too heavy. I'm going to give my life back to God. I'm going to give my struggle, my fight back to God, back to life. And as you let go of this, you begin to discover this feeling of relief. There's this feeling of coming into greater alignment with grace, with God, with your true nature. And you begin to notice what's much easier to receive. It's much easier to receive God's grace when we're not holding on. It's much easier to be open and relaxed and at peace and connected with the depth of our silent nature when we're not holding on, when we're not fighting with life. We begin to notice our heart goes from being hard to being soft. We begin to inwardly smile and feel a depth of communion with God, with grace. And so I invite you, if you're feeling lost, yes, simply come into your heart. That's all that's required here. Come into your heart and breathe. A deep, full breath. And on the exhale, let go. Let go of the struggle. Let go of the fight. Oftentimes we become quite tired from holding on so tightly, so tensely. And so if you are feeling tired, get comfortable. Relax your body. Relax your mind. And just breathe. Just breathe. This sense of letting go, it doesn't have to be a struggle. And so I invite you just to take deeper and deeper breaths and slowly relax your form. Feel that which is alive within your nature, that which is good within you. And call upon God. Lord, come into me. Fill me with your grace. Fill me with your aliveness. Fill me with your divinity. And as we say this prayer, we're relaxing. We're letting our prayer go. We're acknowledging that God has heard us. That God will take care of us. That God is in charge. So we're letting go into this space. So if there's any part of your body which is struggling, I invite you just soften. Just soften. Open your hearts and receive what is here. Receive. And so I invite you to continue to letting go, continue to breathe, continue to experience what is here. And so as we switch gear into tonight's talk, and I'll answer these questions, I invite you to stay open, stay receptive, to continue to connect with that which is quiet, that which is silent, that which is luminous within your very nature. And so one of the things that I wanted to speak about tonight, a topic that I was hoping to speak about, and of course, if there's any questions, you're welcome to raise your hand or to send them in to me, and I'll get to them. But one of the things that I wanted to speak about is what I call pitfalls on the path. And so I have the whole list of things that out of all the people I've worked with, these are the most common topics that come up. And so, yes, I see your question. I feel your question. And yes, I understand this feeling of feeling damned, feeling like God doesn't love you, feeling as if you've sinned. And this is yes, one of the pitfalls I'd like to speak about this evening. Is this feeling that we are somehow outside of God's love? God doesn't look at us as sinners. God doesn't judge us as good or bad. We must remember that's an archaic view, an old world view. But as we really look at our life, as we really look at this universe, we see God has made an evolutionary world. We see that God made us. God made our minds. God made our humanity. God made our ego. To truly sin, you know what sinning actually means. You know the way it was spoken about in the Bible. It means to miss the mark. But guess what? In an evolutionary world, you keep the world that God created, we all miss the mark. We continually miss the mark. That's what it means. That's what it means to live in an evolutionary world. But we must come into a right relationship with God, a humble relationship, where we understand God created us. God created the causes and conditions of this world. God created an evolutionary world. And therefore, we are evolving beings. And so any sin that we think we've ever done, it's because God made it so, because God willed it. But when we choose to be in our mind and not in our hearts, when we make this fundamental error, which is, you know, the great error that almost everyone on the path makes, there's this sense that I'm outside of God. I'm outside of God's love. But it's not true. It's absolutely not true. God gave us an ego. God gave us a mind. God connected our mind and our ego and our emotional nature to the collective consciousness and the collective unconsciousness. So we have everything, everything within us. All that is great and wonderful and divine, and all that is human, and all that is animalistic. God created this world, so if we want to blame anyone for the causes and conditions of this world, please do not blame yourself. But by all means, you can blame God. And so one of the great pitfalls on the path is a misunderstanding of whose world this is. This is God's world. God created it. God created the causes and conditions. God created such a thing called anger. God created anger. God created violence. God created a world where animals eat each other. But God also created evolution. And we're evolving out of these lower ways of being into greater ways of being. And so I encourage you, don't blame yourself if you find yourself in a place where you feel confused by your mind, struggling with your mind. attached to your mind. Don't blame yourself. God created all these potentials, all these possibilities, all these experiences. But the invitation here, if we want to become closer to God, if we want to live to our highest potential, we must let go of judgment. We must let go of what the Buddha called wrong view and step into right view. And from this place of seeing clearly, we see it's an evolutionary world. None of us here are monsters, but we all have an animal nature, a human nature, and a divine nature. And every day of our life, we are given the choice. From which place do we want to live? From which place? Do we want to live from the highest or lowest? And for many of us, it takes some effort to let go of the heaviness of our animal nature, to let go of the clinginess of our human nature, and to begin to develop a sense of mastery in this world. And so one of the things that I wanted to speak about, as I had about 10 different pitfalls that most of us make on the path. And the first one is one I've spoken about a lot. And I call it this sense of the practice dilemma. All these things, they're almost like a dilemma or a positive and negative aspect to it. So some individuals on the path, they practice too much. They meditate for 10 hours a day every day. They live like monks, and they place total emphasis on practice. And there's other individuals who place no emphasis on practice. But of course, the truth is we want to be somewhere in between. When we practice, it's an opportunity for us to come into right relationship. Right relationship with the path, right relationship with our true nature, right relationship with God. Spiritual practice is about coming into communion with our divinity. Coming into communion with it. And so if we find ourselves lost, oftentimes it is because we're not practicing, or because the way in which we are practicing is not working. And so it's important that we examine our relationship to practice. I can remember at one point in my life I meditated, 3 or 4 hours every single day, for a year or two. And I'm a big fan of practice. I'm an hour a day kind of guy for, 20 something years. But at some point, I got a little bit neurotic about my practice and was practicing 3 or 4 hours of formal meditation every single day, reading loads of spiritual books, spending all my time with my teacher. And I made this mistake of thinking that I could meditate my way to God. Now, meditation absolutely brought me a clarity of mind. But I was efforting too much. And so if we do effort, it's important that we effort from our heart, not from our minds. We effort from our heart, and when we effort from our heart, it becomes our practice, and our effort becomes effortless because we begin to come into the flow of divinity. It's an overwhelming flow, an abundant flow, a flow that has no beginning and no end. And life begins to become a joy. Our spiritual practice becomes a joy. It isn't this thing that we struggle with or fight with. And so if we have a meditation practice that we're struggling with and fighting with, Well, I would say we're probably doing it the wrong way. That's not a judgment, it's just a sense of discernment. We want our practice to be open and lighthearted. It should feel like drinking a big tall glass of water after a long walk across the desert. And so the next thing I want to speak about, along with the pitfalls on the path, is not having a relationship with God. It's thinking I can do it all on my own. And then the flip side of it is relying completely and totally on God and thinking I can't do anything, that only God can do it. Let's see, the greatest truths are paradoxes. We come into the middle and we see that God is waking up in us and as us. And so it's important that we have a relationship with God, a relationship with that which is greater. If we don't have a relationship with that which is greater, well, we tend to be overly focused on our human egoic nature. Normally, if we're talking about the spiritual path, we're talking about our spiritual egoic nature. And there's many people I've met have really big spiritual egos. And oftentimes they make this other mistake, which is another pitfall, which is valuing philosophy over direct experience. So they think they can figure life out. They read a lot of books on non-duality, and they have the science of it all figured out, how spiritual awakening works. And they can repeat it to you very quickly, very precisely. And yet in their direct experience, because they've not fully valued their direct experience, they've overly valued their mind instead of valuing God. We come into this pitfall of having zero relationship to the direct experience of truth, but perhaps 100% relationship with the philosophy of truth. And those are two radically different things. And so we have to be careful that we don't read too many spiritual books and never practice and think we know something when we in fact do not. In fact, it's much more wise to be humble, to be open, and to allow God to teach you from the inside out. Allow God to show you what the truth is. It's much more powerful. And of course, if we want to be free in this world, this is the path to truth. Truth is a direct experience. It's not a philosophy. Now, it's important, as I was speaking in the beginning, to have the right relationship, a right understanding. In Buddhism, they call this wisdom, direct experience coupled with wisdom. This together can make the causes and conditions for a powerfully awakened individual. Powerfully awakened individual. And so the next thing, the next pitfall that I see often on the spiritual path is individuals who overly value the environment and individuals who undervalue the environment. And let me speak what I mean about that. Many years ago I went and I studied at, or I went and I visited. I should correct myself, I didn't study here, but I visited the Thomas Merton's monastery in Kentucky. Yeah, it's called Gethsemane. Very beautiful place. But I can remember that within the walls of the monastery, And the monks, they kind of, they live in there, and they don't leave these walls. And there was something written on one of the walls. I can't remember what it exactly said, but it's basically telling the monks, stay within the protective walls of the monastery. And so in the monastic tradition, oftentimes we overly value the environment. We think that the only time we can wake up is in a monastery. The only time, the only place where God lives is in the church or in the cathedral or in the, the meditation temple or whatever it is. I fell into this a lot, this confusion with my teacher, as there was this sense that if I was going to wake up, I was going to wake up in the temple with my teacher right there at my side. He would say the right words to me. We'd be meditating together, and grace would open me in such a way. And it'd be absolutely perfect. And the real paradoxical or ironic thing is, the moment of my first major awakening, the thing that really blew the door open, was on pretty much the worst day of my life. The causes and conditions were absolutely horrid for for me to be having a wonderful meditation or, holy experience or anything like that. I was going through a divorce and my children were leaving me, and I was basically, falling apart in a pool of tears when something broke loose within my consciousness. And I said yes to God. I fell on my knees and I admitted that I cannot control life. I cannot control the environment. I cannot control the outward reality. And so there's many individuals who think we have to spend our whole life in a monastery, our whole life in a temple, who have a strong bias against the world. But we must remember that God created this beautiful world. God created the world. Most spiritual people, it's funny, they're so irritable, they're so judgmental about the external reality. They're so grumpy and, so neurotic about what thoughts flow through their consciousness. Or, I was working in a kitchen once at a Tarabandala, the Buddhist retreat center, and there was a we were cooking food for everyone and, chopping vegetables and washing dishes and doing this and that. And at some point, one of the girls in the kitchen, she put on some music, and it was, she put on some rock and roll or something, and we were having just a divine time. All of us were, kind of just having a good time, chopping vegetables and smiling. And, someone came in the room and said, how dare you play that music in here? This is a spiritual place. And, it wasn't like we were listening to gangster rap or anything. It was just some silly song on the radio. But everyone was cheerful and happy. And, and this particular person, it was overvaluing the environment. It was acting like, if there was rock and roll music here, then this place was unholy or something like that. And people make this mistake often. They think that if I have children, I can't wake up. If I run a business, I can't wake up. If I, have a busy life, I can't live in a divine way in the world. And it's simply not the truth. It's simply not the truth. And we must remember this, that all of life, this entire world, this entire universe, is God's universe. Nothing here is outside of the realm of God. Nothing is outside of the realm of divinity. We must remember that the outer world is a reflection of the inner world. And it's our work to transform it. But we don't transform it through being neurotic and overly controlling or overly judgmental. The most judgmental people I know, unfortunately, are spiritual people. They're always judging the external reality. But if we truly want to transform external reality, we bring a sense of love. We bring a sense of divinity to the external reality. We open our hearts and engage with life. This is how the world changes. This is how the world grows. This is God's invitation. It's God's invitation to us. It's not to come to this world and judge it. Just keep in mind, when we judge this world, we're judging God's world. We're judging God's reality. And so it's not our job to judge it. It's our job to open our hearts, allow God to flow into our hearts and flow out of us and into this external world. If we want to live in a way that brings greater harmony, we must be connected to that which is good within us, not that which is judgmental. This is a very common thing. I see so many spiritual people just judging the outer world. And it breaks my heart to see, because we do violence when we judge. When we embrace the outer world, it grows, it changes, it transforms, the vibration raises. I had this funny experience today. As I went out to, actually had a my brother-in-law. He came into town unexpected last night, late last night, and so he invited us to go ice skating. And so we drove, way up into the mountains, like at 10,000 feet, where the lakes were frozen. Because of global warming right now, the lakes around, 6 or 7,000 feet should be frozen, but they're not because it's so warm. But we drove up to right about 10,000 feet, and we went to this place called Andrews Lake at the top of Molas Pass here in southwest Colorado. When we got to the lake, there was, only a couple people there. The lake was absolutely pristine. It had so much. There's just a supreme silence there, the supreme brilliance of the blue sky. We're up there above tree line, and you see these huge mountain peaks, surrounding us. It was absolutely wonderful. Just to connect fully with nature, to step into this space of absolute divinity. That's one of the beautiful things about nature, is it has the potential to wake us up quite quickly if we're willing to drop out of our minds and to come into the direct experience of what's here in every moment. And so we got down to the lake, and we put our ice skates on, and we were skating around, just having a wonderful time, experiencing the silence, experiencing the hugeness of the sky, feeling absolute oneness with nature. And so we had the whole lake to ourselves for 45 minutes or an hour or so, and then another car came and another car came, and pretty soon there was about 45 or 50 people there at the lake. All these hockey players showed up, and it was almost hilarious because I don't know if any of you have hung out with hockey players, but they brought all these beers and they were drinking beer. There's all these dogs running around, and pretty soon the whole scene became quite chaotic. And I noticed that my nature, because I'm a pretty sensitive guy, my nature started to get a little bit irritated because there was so much energy. that had come to our nice zen-like experience that we were having, and just an hour ago. And I noticed, the more and more I paid attention to the hockey players and all the dogs and the chaos and the cookouts, it really became a circus quite quick. But the more I paid attention to the circus, the more I fell away from my direct experience. And see, this is one of the mistakes we make on the path, is when life gets busy, when life gets chaotic, we start connecting with the chaos and stop connecting with the hugeness of the sky, the hugeness of our direct experience, the profoundness of our divinity. And we all make this mistake in the world. When things get busy, we quickly forget our divinity. We quickly get carried away by the busyness and the confusion of life. But the great invitation here is, can we allow for the busyness of life? Can we allow for the chaos of life? Can we be like the sky, which is vast and open and free and does not argue with anything? Can we stand in the truth and stay there? And so I noticed myself becoming a little bit irritated, and I said, oh no, I don't need to become irritated with these beer drinking hockey players who brought their, 15 dogs and running all over the place. It was funny, at one point I sat down on on the edge of the lake, sat in the grass and tried to pour myself a cup of tea and have a Zen moment, but these two dogs came and knocked my tea over, and I got a little bit upset, inwardly. But then at some point, it's like we have to smile, we have to laugh. If we take our environment too seriously, if we take our Zen cup of tea too seriously, if we take life too seriously, and the people disturbing our peace, we no longer become, we step out of our Buddha nature and step into a judgmental nature, an irritable nature. And so if we're a Buddha and a dog comes by and knocks over our cup of tea, we laugh, we smile, we pet the dog. We get up and we join with the busyness of life. We dance with the busyness of life, but we dance from a place of peace, not from a place of the collective consciousness. Because the collective consciousness, it will carry us away very quickly, very quickly. So this is another great pitfall on the path, is we become overly concerned, overly connected to the collective consciousness, or worse yet, the collective unconsciousness. It was funny, I was watching all these hockey guys come out to our Zen lake here at 10,000 feet. And one of them started drinking, and then the other one started drinking, and then all of them were drinking together. But we have to ask ourselves this. When our friends start drinking, does that mean we start drinking? Do we just go with the flow? The flow of the collective consciousness or the collective unconsciousness? If you go with the flow of the collective unconsciousness, well, the world doesn't change. We remain stuck. Or worse yet, we regress. And so one of the great pitfalls on the spiritual path is forgetting who we are and going with the flow the normal flow of life, the normal evolutionary trajectory of life, which is quite slow. I can remember my teacher sitting me down one day. And basically, he told me, Craig, if you study with me, you'll be on the fast track. Do you want to be on the fast track? Or do you want to spend your time with your friends and be on the slow track? And it wasn't a judgment of my friends, but I saw it clearly when I was 19 years old and in college. My friends were drinking, probably drinking heavily, and smoking marijuana and, going to parties, chasing girls. And I knew clearly I didn't want that kind of life. It wasn't that I was judging that life. But we have to decide, what kind of life do we want? What kind of life do we want? Now, there's nothing wrong with playing hockey and enjoying yourself. There's nothing wrong with any of the guys who showed up or, causing all this ruckus today. But we have to look at it. What kind of life do we want? I've played hockey before. I quite enjoyed it. But in this little town where I live, it seems like most of the hockey players, they play hockey and drink heavily simultaneously. That's kind of the collective unconsciousness of the hockey players where I live. We can still play hockey, but we may choose not to drink heavily. And we can go to the holiday parties. But if people are gossiping at the party, do we join them in the gossip? Do we join the group in that which is lower? Or do we choose instead to connect with our heart and say yes to that which is good, that which is true, that which is beautiful in our own nature? Doesn't mean we need to leave the party and act like we are morally or spiritually more superior than the others. In fact, I think what God is asking of us more and more so is, can we integrate our spirituality into our everyday lives? Can we integrate our spirituality into our everyday lives? What does this look like? Sometimes it means going to the party and bringing our highest vibration there, bringing the vibration of love, bringing the vibration of unity. If we're hanging out with family members instead of arguing politics or fighting with our parents, or our brothers and sisters, or our children. Sometimes it means just smiling and embracing them or forgiving them. Sometimes it means setting boundaries. Sometimes it means asking for forgiveness. And so one of the greatest pitfalls on the path that I see, one of the greatest sins meaning missing the mark, is rejecting the world. It's rejecting the world. It breaks my heart. How long as a spiritual individual I rejected the world. I would sit for hours and hours in meditation, deepening into peace. And yet when my meditation was done, I came into the world angry and irritable, wishing the world was different. Arguing with reality, judging the world, judging my friends or family. It's a great sin when we do this. It took me many years to discover that this peace that I was looking for was the very fabric and nature of this world, the very fabric and nature of our being and everyone's being. And so the great invitation here is, can we not reject the world but embrace it? To see the absolute divinity, the absolute spaciousness, the absolute radiance, looking out of your eyes, your mother's eyes, your father's eyes, your children's eyes. Can you see this divinity flowing out of, quote unquote, your enemy's eyes? Can you see this divinity everywhere? If we truly want to step into the non-dual state, the non-dual realization, and live this realization, our heart must be open. And from this space, we must see this love, this luminosity, this divinity everywhere. We must see it everywhere. And so, yes, getting back to this question, this individual who feel as if they've have fallen down a hole and that God doesn't love them. And there's this anger or hatred towards oneself. And we all know these feelings. We all know this feeling of becoming depressed on the path or losing, stepping off the path or falling on our face. We all know this experience. And so the invitation is, can you forgive yourself for being human? Can you forgive yourself for having a mind and having an ego? And I say this as a joke, but can you blame God? Can you blame God? Because God created our mind. God created our ego. God created our behaviors. God easily could have created a universe where anger does not exist. Where hatred doesn't exist, where depression doesn't exist. But can you forgive yourself for being a human? Can you forgive yourself for being confused? And from this place of humility, can you let go of your fight? Can you come into your heart? Can you see, can you acknowledge your own beauty and divinity? This is what's healing. It's healing to acknowledge your own divinity. And one of the great mistakes that many of us make on the path is we never acknowledge our divinity. We don't even know it's there. We're too busy looking for it in our teacher or in the book or reading, the scriptures. We're too busy looking for it in the church or the temple. We're too busy projecting it to our guru. But can you just look in the mirror and see the absolute radiance, absolute tenderness, absolute innocence pouring out of your eyes? Can you see that? Can you experience that truth? Can you take that experience seriously? Most of us take our minds seriously. We place way too much emphasis on our own thinking minds, our own thoughts. We believe our thoughts and take them to be the truth. The truth of our experience. And when we're depressed, we say, I am depressed.
versus noticing what's actually happening is that the space of I am, the vast space of awareness and luminosity, the space of I am, is noticing depression. Depression arise in this being, in this individual. The space of I am is noticing self-hatred or anger. The space of I am is noticing crazy thoughts. What if we just look at this? Instead of focusing fully on the self-hatred or the anger or the depression, what if instead we focused on the space, the primary space, the primary presence which is here, the primary space of I am? Then notice this I am is silent, this I am is innocent, this I am is radiant and beautiful. This space of I am is luminous and has a gentle intelligence to it. When you begin to step into this space, it's hard to take depression seriously. It's hard to take anger seriously. It's hard to take desire seriously. Self-hatred falls away as you see how beautiful you are. You see how divine you are. This compassionate humility arises. And the anger dissolves, the judgment dissolves. And to bring it full circle, this is the space of Christ consciousness. A space of coming into the direct recognition of your true nature. Which is love, which is compassion. And if there's anything you struggle with, forgiveness is the natural response. Letting go is the natural response. Truth and strength and love becomes the natural response. And so, yes, the greatest pitfall on the path is taking our thoughts and our emotions too seriously. Antidote for this, the healing for this, is taking your direct experience of your true nature completely, wholeheartedly, and absolutely seriously. It's from this place of sincerity. That we truly awaken to this absolute beauty, this absolute Christ consciousness, which we all are. So I thank you all for joining me this evening. Again, it's been my pleasure. I'm certainly going to miss you the next 2 weeks over Christmas and New Year's. And of course, if any of you would like to do deeper work, I encourage you to send me an email and connect with me in that way. And again, I want to thank you all, for the donations you've offered. And again, I'll remind you there's a donation link on my website, gregholiday.com, with two L's, and there's a PayPal link, there's my address if any of you feel inclined to mail a check and support the teachings. It's so helpful to receive all the positive help and the positive support you've given along the way. Of course, the teachings are always offered are free of charge, but it's nice to have some support. Have some support to support these teachings. And so I want to thank you all for your generous support and sharing of your hearts and joining in this space of love. So may peace be with you all. I have a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Solstice. And I encourage you all, even though we won't be meeting, but to take this holiday season, to take this winter season as an opportunity to go more deeply inward, more fully into the peace, more fully into the hugeness and brilliance of your own divinity. Peace be with you all, and have a wonderful evening. Good night.